Hi, and welcome to the Dewing Grain podcast. Dewing Grain are independent and local grain traders. From seed supply to harvest movement and storage contracts, they can offer you the best strategies to achieve the highest prices for your harvest. Each week on our podcast, we begin with the market report, giving you up-to-date information and analysis, followed by the farm chat, where we catch up on agricultural issues with a guest or two. So let's start with Andrew Dewing for this week's market report. And don't forget, you can always check current market prices on the homepage of our website, dewinggrain.co.uk.
Welcome to the market report. What follows are my thoughts or gut instincts on what the market is going to do. It is not an instruction to trade. Any decision to trade is yours. Market report week commencing 11th of March 2024. I was supposed to be in Rome this week, and you know what? I've been off. It's been really, really annoying. And Josh went across there. Yeah, it's been a really good conference about malting barley we were supposed to be attending, and there's lots of interesting stuff. But what struck me this morning when I was looking at the supply and demand figures for malting barley that they sent across was that there's a very big upsurge in production, which clearly there won't be the problems in Denmark as bad as last year, probably. There is a very large assumption that the crop that is not yet in the ground is going to be able to get planted and have good growing conditions, which is a brave thing these days. So any little hiccup in this weather and that market is brittle because the stocks are lower. And as I say, they're writing in some big stocks. Yes, consumption has been down this year, so the stock levels are slightly higher than the worst fears. But next year's production, yeah, not wholly convinced it's going to be as high. Obviously, if we have a brilliant spring and summer, then we'll have a very big crop, and that will be the end of that. But there's many a slip between the cup and the lip, as they say. This week's farm chat is Webby and Joe, who are talking to Dominic Swan from the Catalyst Group, who did a talk at the Norfolk Farming Conference. Dominic works closely in the Catalyst Group with the farmers that are involved with that, which are some big estates in Norfolk, and they are very carefully looking at their data of everything that everybody does. Fascinating stuff. A good interview, so yep, enjoy that one. Right, let's do some quick market stuff. Oilseed rape, we'll very quickly just say 345. Doesn't mean anything to anybody, really, does it? So 345, oilseed rape. There you go. Feed barley, 132, X-Farm, anytime you like. Yeah, what else shall I say about that? Not a lot to say, is there? We don't really care, do we? We just want to get rid of it. So, flippantly, moving on to feed wheat. Feed wheat's a bit more interesting. Future store tonnage is moving. The northern farmers are holding out stoutly, which is very good. I'm sure they're right. They're always right. They're never wrong. And if they are, they never admit it. The point is that they are going to hold out and hold out and hold out. When they finally give way and sell it, that's when people will stop picking up wheat from future stores in Norfolk. At the moment, we are beginning to see quite an upsurge in lorries coming to our county to take wheat to the north. So values X farm for feed wheat, it's going to be something like 150x for spot, 155x for June. Somewhere between the two is the April and May price, 57x for July. That's quite punchy, I think. The futures have been low this week. They've been, you know, hammering down. They actually had a green day on the screen, which was incredibly exciting yesterday. So maybe that in itself is, again, we'll use the phrase, the worm has turned. I don't think they have. I think there's some technical intricacies to come from that contract yet. Just slightly worried about this carry to new crop. It's looking good at the moment and everyone's anticipating it. Lots of farmers are going to use it and they're definitely planning to carry, but they're not selling it. And I just think that premium will come in and then go out again. So there you go. That's what I think is going to happen to that. I think people will start to sell the new crop to carry their short forward and buy in their old to get away from having a short May futures position, which has been hedging them. We shall see on that one. But I still cannot see old crop wheat getting out of its problem. You can't export it. We're at least 5, 6, 7 pounds away export-wise, and we have a surplus, and we're relying on that carry, which not everybody can do. So if it is farmers in the north predominantly holding out, those are the factors that you have to consider when you're making that stance. I think you're wrong. I think the market is going to continue to be unable to go up significantly unless we have a major weather event. And even then, I think UK feed wheat old crop is a trouble. might well be wrong on that, I hope so. Olcott Malting Barley's got a bit more life in it. A few trades have gone on this week. It's difficult to value stuff. Low 200s, whatever you've got, show it to us and we'll talk to you about it. Malting Barley, new crop values, it's the wrong moment to trade it. Until the stuff gets in the ground and we feel confident about the crop, I think there are some nerves and everyone's aware that the weather's got to behave itself. It is well into March and the land is only just coming right for a few people and not everybody has the luxury of being able to get on and get planting. So we know it's beginning, but it's going to take a few more days yet of drying. A value that's been trading this week, roughly X-Farm for 185 spring barley's £200 X-Farm, something in the region of that. So if you take a harvest discount 10, 15 quid lower, that's about the theoretical value of a 185 spring barley. Obviously, the distilling special stuff or special people has a 10 to 20 pound premium depending on which particular spirit you are supplying. So yeah, I think it's a interesting market. I think we can be, you know, encouraged by some of the movement from futures stores is good news. It does mean, you know, I was beginning to worry that we really were going to be stuffed with lots and lots of wheat in June and July with nothing moving. Stuff moving now, I know everybody, you know, we need to get the rent, but we also need to get the stuff out. It's good for us for it to go because this year's crop was not perfect. It went into some very dodgy harvest conditions and we had to dry everything, and it's, you know, as a storekeeper it's not perfect. It's not like you lot out there cutting everything at 12% and it's 80 kilo weight. This is a more difficult year, so I'm glad to see some stuff moving, and what implication that has for the market is I think it's going to continue pretty sideways to maybe slightly up to slightly boring until them northerners make that decision to go, oh, do you know, I'll let a bit go then. Anyway, with that happy and very, very poor impersonation of a northern person, have a great week.
Thank you for listening. Please remember that any decision to trade on this opinion is yours.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you for listening and to ask you to help us grow our audience by leaving a rating and review telling us what you like about our podcast. On Apple Podcasts, you can easily do this by scrolling down our show page, selecting a star rating and tapping write a review.
So this week I've kindly roped in Dominic Swan from Catalyst Group. Morning. Hi, Dominic.
Morning.
And I've also got my colleague Joe with me.
Morning.
So Dominic, I don't know if you heard me in the podcast, but I'm notoriously terrible at introducing people, so I'll probably let yourself do that. You're with the Catalyst Group. I'll let you introduce the farms and what that involves. You guys formed 3 years ago, did you?
Yeah, I've been getting on for 4 years now.
Tell us about the Catalyst Group, please. What?
Yeah, so Catalyst Farming started almost 4 years ago now. It's a collaboration between four Norfolk farming businesses. So that's Sewell Farms, Holcombe Farming Company, NE Salmons and Raynham Farm.
Yeah.
It started as a small NIAB project looking into on-farm data and basically found that they already hold a lot of data on the farm, but they're not doing anything with it. And the other part that they're missing some pretty useful pieces of information about the crops, basically, so plant populations and crop data, and realized that they weren't going to be able to collect this data by themselves because the farm managers don't have time, basically. So they needed somebody to do it. And then so between NIAB and the farms, they applied for funding for quite a big project. Unfortunately didn't gain the grant funding, but the farms decided it was probably important enough to fund it themselves.
Very forward thinking,
where it started.
And so then the data you are collecting, I'm sure you just, this is spreadsheet after spreadsheet after spreadsheet. So, I mean, what sort of data are you collecting?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of spreadsheets.
Yeah.
I mean, the main one is yield is what we're looking at, but then it's what affects yield as well.
Yeah.
So what we're doing to the crop affects the output.
You bravely, because I think it would be an awful thing to do, you stood up in front of the Norfolk Farming Conference, 400 or 500 people, however many, and I thought you presented really well, so it was really interesting. But the one that sticks in my head, you talked about the yield lag on drilling dates. So, I mean, you've collected that data over 3 years, I think we said.
Yeah, it'd be four harvests now.
Four harvests, and I think you said, I forget what the data was, but you lose 40 kilos of yield per day from what date was it?
From mid-September. It's, roughly just over a ton every month, which is about 40 kilos every day.
That is shocking. How valid, so you've got 4 years' worth of data. I mean, how long will you need 10 years of data before you really are on the button with it?
I mean,
each year you're going to get better, aren't you?
Yeah, I think there's so many other variables in there that are affecting it, such as the soil type is probably the biggest one. Mm. You get such a range of yields within each day of drilling. So it's not quite as simple as that, but I think we're pretty confident already that drilling data is having that sort of effect.
Is there any relationship between, obviously you talk about immediately, you know, the soil type and things. Are certain soil types better at, are you able to even identify now at this time with the sort of data you've got, certain soil types are better later on or earlier, or, you know, is there more resilience to, you know, the numbers, the yield if on certain soil types?
I mean, we've probably not got enough data to really quantify the relationship between soil type and drilling date as two separate factors, but I would say the lighter land certainly does not do well later drilled. Mm. It's all about getting roots down in light land, so the earlier you drill it, the bigger the root system. On the heavier land, it can definitely cope with being drilled a bit later. It'll catch up later on in the growing season. But on heavier land, if you run into wetter weather from later drilling, then you're less likely to get it drilled or possibly make a mess drilling it.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys, now, you must be seeing it pay off. Obviously, there's been a lot of money invested and you're so far into it. It's quite forward thinking. The decision making, it must really aid decision making from each one of the farm managers to be on the button. And as we discussed, sort of like slightly off air, but the miseries of the grain trade at the moment, margins are really tight. So to have every tool, you know, in your armory to make those decisions must be really helpful for those specific farm managers all involved.
Yeah, absolutely. It is about finding the optimum of everything we do, and that's, I don't think we're going to find one particular thing that increases the profitability of the businesses by 50% in one simple move. It's going to be lots and lots of little increments of 1% and 2% that really makes the difference, and that's all about informed decision making. So anything we can collect that will help guide decisions is a benefit to the farms.
It's sort of going off more of a rabbit hole type thing. The varieties of your wheat and things, from a consistency and a fair sort of comparison, are you comparing the same varieties against each other as well? Or is it...
If you're going to be comparing lots of different varieties, then you ideally need replicated plot trials. It's the only statistically fair way of comparing them. But we're drilling a whole field with one single variety, so it's quite difficult to compare perfectly one variety to another variety, or one field to another field if they're different varieties.
You guys kindly invited me to one of your meetings, because you have, is it monthly, quarterly meetings? And we did a crop walking bit, which sadly I never get many opportunities to do, but I did have a walk around with yourselves and the agronomist. And I was really impressed because you have the trial plots, basically, and you were trying all sorts. So seed rates, there was fur rates, there was all sorts. And it was really interesting to see it. I mean, are you getting really fine-tuned into that now to know what the winning combo is?
Yeah, I think it's trying to find the economic of everything we do, the economic optimum of everything we do. We need to trial it for ourselves because you can use national average results from the likes of NIAB, who will tell you that the optimum fertiliser rate for wheat is between 200 and 240 kilos. Mm. But actually, that's got a big data set and it's averaged out across lots of different soil types. Mm. So really, we're looking at our own soil types in our own situation and then running nitrogen trials in those to find our own economic optimum for those particular areas.
I mean, there's a combo with kind of growing the most cost-efficient crop as well, isn't there?
Yeah, we're definitely after the economic optimum, not just the highest yield. Definitely, we've got to.
Everyone loves a bit of yield bragging rights, don't they?
But,
but, you know, you've got to grow a crop. And especially with the volatility of fert prices, I suppose that's very relevant in the whole equation, really, isn't it?
Yeah, again, so once we've collected this information on how the rate of fertiliser and the yield and the sort of response, you can change the grain price and the fertiliser price afterwards from year to year to find out what, because the optimum will change depending on those two prices as well.
Do you drill back as far as, you know, fuel usage on each field? Do you even, this is really unfair, but even operator efficiencies, stuff like that?
It's definitely something we've looked into quite a lot. Not necessarily how much fuel is allocated to each field, but more how much fuel is used in each operation.
Okay.
So can we get away with a more efficient style of cultivation? If we are reducing cultivation to save fuel, is that having an impact on yield? Mm. If we cut back too much, are we going to then be losing yield? So it's about finding the economic optimum of cultivation as well.
Yeah.
And then with operator efficiency, it's definitely something we've looked at. We've compared block cropping systems to quite a spread out farming system where no two fields are the same.
Okay.
And the efficiency loss farming in that way is noticeable. It's really, really does make a big difference.
Interesting. Everyone's like clearly bought into this, and what I'm very impressed by is, and this is going to offend a lot of farmers, I'm afraid, but you guys are effectively, it's like collaboration, isn't it? You are sharing information, and I love the fact that you guys have quite an open book policy. You discuss the complete ins and outs, which I'm afraid to say not many farmers do amongst themselves. It's quite refreshing to see it, and you have very sort of proactive functional meetings, which is quite healthy. Do you see the group expanding, or is it you guys have got your thing going, there's no reason to expand the group, is there really?
Yeah, definitely it doesn't work without complete transparency and trust within the group as well, because you need to be open with your data and be happy to share it with everybody. Mm. So expanding the group, I mean, there is sensitive information that we do share about. We have got to be careful who we're sharing it with. And in terms of expanding it, we're already relatively large scale.
Relatively, you know, very large scale, I'd probably say, yes.
And the bigger you go, the thinner everything is spread. I mean, this, we still haven't finished doing what we're doing within the four farms we work for. So at the moment, we don't see the need to necessarily go any bigger, because the most important part is the context that comes with the data. Just data by itself is not always that useful. You've got to understand the context around it.
In terms of talking about the immediate, so weather, as we all know, particularly in Norfolk, has been utterly shite. Do you know what has been the rainfall today on this winter cereal crop? Has it been a lot?
I think since September we're over 600
mm. The normal is about 700 mm, isn't it?
We'd be 650 to 700 mm as an average annual rainfall.
Wow.
Which in the last 12 months it's been somewhere between 950 and 1100 millimetres of rain. So sort of 70% over the
so in order. Terms of you'd be feeding that information back to the farms, everyone's going to be seeing this. Does that, in mentally, are people trimming yield expectations back, or too early for that, I suppose?
I think it's, probably a bit early for that. The biggest effect of yield is the weather during the growing season, not necessarily just the winter. It definitely will have had an effect on certain crops, especially land that isn't well drained or established a bit late, and certainly on the heavier land. So drainage is really going to pay off this year. It's a pretty obvious thing to say. But no, I think it's probably too early to call yield wise.
So we always know that there are certain key variables and key factors that are going to be obviously affecting yield and all the other stuff. Is there anything, they're very obvious, when you're suddenly really focused on something, you start to suddenly identify actually more specific elements, not just looking at a fertilizer rate or just a simple, very basic observation of soil type or something, but are there any key things that you're identifying going forward that, hang on, this is actually much greater than we expected? This influence, is there a common, are you seeing any of those things now? You know, is there something that you, hang on, that's a bit of an unusual situation. Is there a relationship there? Is anything coming out that you think we've got to focus on more this rather than this blanket approach?
One of the biggest factors we notice that has a big effect on output that's not just an input is the timing of the input and getting the timing right.
Yep.
If you're too early or too late on applying an input, then it has less of an effect on increasing your output, basically. So trying to hit the optimum timing.
But it's not literally like a date in the diary.
No, not at all. It'll change year to year. It's not a set time at all. No, it's more relevant to the condition.
Timing in terms of when all these sort of stars align, as it were. I've got that. Now we're going. And so sometimes we have conversations with people and they're talking about, well, you know, get it in by this date or that date. And I appreciate that's what you're saying between these dates. But the thing is, there must be a variables, amount of rainfall or the temperature, soil temperature or various other things that must align, that must come together at that time. That's what obviously the timing is based on, isn't it?
Yeah, the timing of operation or input is the optimum's reached by the conditions around that time, really. And it's easy to look back and find when the optimum was, but it's quite difficult at the time to know this is the right thing to do. So spring barley now, for example, potentially dry couple of days ahead, should we be forcing it slightly to get it in because there's another week of rain coming, and then before you know it, you're at the end of March, and we know we're going to start to lose yield by the time we get into April, certainly.
The famous cuckoo barley, as we all referred to, yeah.
So do you push it in now, or do you wait because actually there might be a much better drilling condition in April, and it's only actually by harvest really, we'll know when the best point was at the moment.
Such a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, there are in Norfolk, we had a who you met this morning, and a farmer in who's just started today on some light land. There aren't many, and I think one of the group has possibly, I think you mentioned, on some lighter bits. So
a couple of the farms have got a bit in, yeah. But that was back in January.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting, and there's forecast, as you said, of some more rain, but hopefully the window will be right and there'll be a chance to get in. But it's a bit nip and tuck at the moment, isn't it? It's a little bit close.
As everybody said, I'm sure there'll be a big drought to follow it.
Oh, so. God, yeah, law of averages, something. Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, great, something to the joys of farming, as they say. Yeah, I remember back to conversation. So Paul Hoverson, who I think it was probably orchestrated a lot of pulling Catalyst together, really, didn't he? Said to me a long time ago, he said, anything after, I think, the end of the first week in November, in terms of winter wheat, winter cereal, is like, forget it. He's very Paul, very Danish about it, very like, I was like, okay. And to be fair, he's probably right. I mean, certainly with the analysis that you guys came back with, the yield lag, it's a bold thing to say because when people have got wheat seed, they want to drill it and, you know, drill the whole of November into December. There's been some January wheat's been drilled, hasn't there, winter cereals. It's a tough one to call to know when to pull the plug, isn't it?
And I think actually when you're looking at drilling wheat, for example, yeah, November, if you look on our statistically, it's lower yielding. But that's usually because the conditions in November are not as favourable as the conditions in September or October. But actually, last year or the year before, we were lifting sugar beet in October, November in good conditions and drilling wheat in behind it in very good conditions. And we had some really good yields after it. It's not about calendar date at all. It's about conditions, but usually conditions do follow calendar date. It normally gets wetter as the winter goes on.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of break crops, a real problem. Rapeseed, everyone's had a flogging and has had a skin full of it and had enough. Are you guys trialling various different breaks? Is there a solution to the break crop saga?
Yeah, break crops are being scrutinised all the time, really. Mm-hmm. We do already have quite a lot of break crops within the group. They all have their pros and cons.
Yeah.
Certainly oilseed rape is really under scrutiny at the moment.
And I'll go over the group. I am aware that it's come back a lot, but it's significant, isn't it? And are people generally trying to avoid it wherever possible, aren't they now?
I think it's everybody is still growing it, but we're just trying to reduce the risk of growing it. So establishing it without a pre-emergence and to make sure you've actually got a crop there to start with and keeping operations cheap. Basically, but it is again, if we want to be drilling in September, we need these break crops that allow us to start drilling in September. So the likes of oilseed rape or spring beans or peas,
yeah,
none of which really make a lot of money.
None of them are exciting. There's not a single one at the moment. I did wonder whether the SFI come into place somewhere, but
yeah, definitely it's something we've looked at because with the recent increases in payments for them, they're quite an attractive option. But possibly the con of that is this build-up of weed seeds and the coming out of a two-year lay potentially could
cause problems down the line. Yeah,
sort of meandering around along with this, you know. But I'm interested in: are you finding any bits of equipment or software and things that you've used that suddenly thought that's not very good and found something else that's more useful? You know, from a listener's point of view. People are going to be thinking, okay, they're doing this, they're doing that. Well, some of that's, you know, straightforward. I understand that. But have you come across any bits of kit that you'd say, you know, that's been an absolute godsend in terms of analysis, in terms of measuring certain aspects of what you're doing, gear in the tractor, gear in, you know, like other types of equipment? Is there anything that you'd say, yeah, I wouldn't be without it now?
Probably the best thing is the weighbridge on the farm, is getting accurate field yields over a weighbridge. Not many farms actually have a weighbridge, maybe rely on a combine yield monitor, which vary in accuracy but getting accurate yield data, I think, is really important. If you're trying to look at what is affecting yield, having the correct yield data is pretty vital. Not just the yield data, but the moisture of that grain as well, obviously.
I mean, combine data is quite often, we have this conversation every year with most growers. It's like, oh, well, the combine says there's that much in the shed. I was like, is there really? Never is. What about, I mean, combine mapping? So I've seen some software, people have said, you know, and you've got a mapping, you've got the colour coding through in the field. That's obviously drawn into what you do. Are you drilling into, you know, plots within the field, basically?
Yeah, combine yield monitoring is definitely something we use. We've been mapping for several years before I started, but it was never used. It is now being looked at. And certainly for the trials we run, it's really useful. When you're looking at a fertilizer response or fungicide response trial, we try and keep it simple. So tramline trials, and then using the combine to cut those tramline trials out. So it's not slowing down the harvest operation, but we're still getting useful information from it. Obviously, that does require the combines being calibrated relatively close to the trial. And in the future, I think a project I'm quite excited about is looking at taking yield maps and soil maps together to zone the farm up slightly to how the soil affects yield, and then can we manage those zones differently because of it, so that the higher yielding areas,
would that be sort of like varial rates on
so the higher yielding areas or the stronger land maybe actually needs a slightly higher seed rate in those areas and potentially a higher fertilizer rate. And
so would you take the attitude of, well, that's a bit shit bit of land, let's not bother with it? I mean, that's a crude way of putting it, and then really look after the stuff that's pucker and say, right, let's really go for it, rather than the other way around of like spend a bit more on the crap land.
There's two ways of looking at it, really. Does the good land yield well, because it's always going to yield well and you can actually cut back on your inputs, or do you push the good land because you could make it yield even more? And it's the same on the poor land. Does the poor land actually need more help to be able to yield, or do you just cut back because it's never going to yield, and that's where you then use an SFI option.
What's your attitude to the monetary value of data? Data is massive. You know, there's big businesses that are paying a fortune for data. You, in over the course of time, because you are so rigorous and kind of diligent on collecting data, you will inherently be picking up a lot of value out of that data. Let's say in 10 years, will you be able to monetize that data?
Potentially, it's not something
you may not
really
want to. It might not be something that's even relevant.
I think with data, it's obviously quite personal to us and is useful to us, and we can get value out of it. I don't know necessarily whether someone else will get value out of our data.
Yeah, there is probably value in what you're learning. The value in it for you as a group is you are helping your decision making massively, because you're working out the winning combo. And over the course of time, it's just going to tweak it every year. Yeah, there is value to the outside world on that. I'm sure there will be at some point. But I'm guessing, you don't need to share it, really, is probably the short answer.
You say don't need to share it, but unfortunately, half of the information about the movement of the tractor, movement of the kit, is already being punched up into some sort of cloud or something anyway. And that information is there. There's no point in getting away from it. Most bits of kit are going to be using some sort of manufacturer's software that you believe, obviously, I mean, very, very cynically about it. You are uploading it to what you believe is yours, but no doubt the T's and C's in that, when you upload it, they will actually look at it and say, well, it's helping us understand improving our bit of kit as well. And that in itself is giving them an advantage over. And also, depending on how big that organization is, they will have other strings to their bow with, you know, not just literally a tractor. They will have some contact with fertilizer, some contact with drills. It goes on and on and on. We are naive if you think that's not going to actually be happening. And it's just building a huge mapping of what next to go to.
It's a bit like the data held in your dodgy Google browsing, Joe, isn't it? Data is a fascinating subject. And it was interesting at the Norfolk Farm Conference, of which you were a big part of, there was another guy talking about data. He was talking about data storage. And I think it's one of the sort of like buzzwords, along with the regen and carbon. It's just becoming a bigger thing. Jamie Lockhart, who has been on the podcast, I think he did enough field on data, and I think we might have to rope him in at some point as well to come on the podcast. Dominic, one last bit just before we sign off. So you've collected all the data. Where do you go with it once you've got it, you know, the feedback throughout the business?
The first port of call with most of it usually is the farm managers, the people making most of the decisions. During the growing season, we're usually meeting up every fortnight, taking it in turns on each farm where we meet and have a bit of a look around one of those farms, but then share the data we've collected over the last 2 weeks and look forward as to what we're going to be doing for the next 2 weeks and what we did the last few years and how it affected what we're doing for that relevant information.
And how do the farm managers then deal with it? Is there sort of like a trickle-down process straight back to the operators? Obviously, there's lots of guys involved on all the enterprises. How do they deal with it as individuals?
So in terms of for the operators, we do meet up 3 or 4 times a year with the operators, and I will present directly to the operators as well, so they understand what we're doing and why we're doing it.
And have they all bought into it?
Yeah, I think so. It is.
I'm sure there was a few sort of bristles and a bit like...
A lot of hesitation at the beginning, probably. One of the interesting things we do, we talked about before, is the operator efficiency. Mm. A lot of this data you can almost put onto a leaderboard of the most efficient.
Oh, do they banter each other and say, he's shit. Yeah.
And
that's great.
But we've had some really positive results from that. When you put up a tractor's idle hours and working hours and show where they how they rank compared to one another. It really does make a big difference on that in the future, because people are consciously thinking, oh, this is going to be shown next time we meet up. So they consciously make that decision to change it.
Ian, that would be terrible for you. Idle hours.
Always thinking. That's the thing. The cogs are wearing.
Deep in thought.
That's great. I think that would be quite motivating, actually, for the guys on farm, you know, to, natural competition and to know how they're performing. You know, it's constant monitoring, isn't it?
Yeah, and I hope it is taken that way, that it is it's friendly competition, that we are
not out
that it's there, and it's not just to see who's the best and who's the worst. It's
the message, as long as the guys get it, is an important one. It's not to catch them out and, like, point the finger. It's more to, you know, have information, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and again, if there is one that maybe sits a little lower than the others, is there a reason for that? And it usually is, and what the context is behind it, why that particular machine is different to the others.
Quite simply, it's just working more smartly. You know, people have this impression that sometimes, you know, long hours and things like that, you're going to get better performance, or sometimes taking some more time is actually going to be better. But it's obviously identifying working more smartly, and that's a really sensible thing. But so many people have grown up in environments where it's all about, you know, more, but actually sometimes a bit less, and just working more smartly, or just, you know, doing things in a certain way, it just cuts little edges off and makes that percentage difference.
Learning from one another as well, because there are 4 farms in the group all doing slightly different things. If we're able to present that back to the operators and the managers on what has worked well and what hasn't, and it's probably the what hasn't worked well is more important. You can learn from one another, so you're not all making the same mistakes.
Great. I think that's going to be really helpful to each farm and individual. No, that's brilliant. I think we've covered quite a lot there, Dominic, and I really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming in. Hopefully we'll get some spring barley drilled over the next few days and some mega yields. Really appreciate your time, and thank you very much. Hopefully get you on again soon and hear what you've got to say in the next couple of years. So,
yeah, thank you very much for inviting me.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe to get updates on new episodes and follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. We are at Dewing Grain. Alternatively, you can call us on 01263 731 550 or email info@dewinggrain.co.uk.